There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
On NFL Live, Tom Brady continues to weigh his options while the rest of the league weighs what happens next. Jeff Darlington joins us with the prospective roadmap. Plus, our insiders look closely at the Bengals' big decision. What goes into making the number one overall pick, and how much pressure is there to get it right? And after turning heads at the Combine in Indianapolis, we'll show you why Isaiah Simmons was almost a star on a different stage. Hello, everybody, and welcome on this Wednesday. I'm Wendy Nutz with Field Gates, Victor Cruz, and Mike Tannenbaum. Now, shortly after the Bengals hand in their card in Las Vegas on April 23rd, it will be the Washington Redskins up next with the number two overall pick. And new head coach Ron Rivera left some uncertainty around the future of his quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, and his position during an appearance on Spain and Company. Now, Rivera didn't completely rule out the possibility of drafting a quarterback, echoing a sentiment he shared since first becoming the Redskins head coach.
I think he'd become a franchise-style quarterback. I do. I'm not going to say it's going to happen overnight.
Well, I just look at the quarterbacks that are here right now. Not just Dwayne, but, you know, with Alex Smith potentially coming back, Case Keenum, Colt McCoy. I mean, these are guys that have played quality football, including Dwayne. Dwayne has played some pretty good football, but, you know, we're in a good situation with the three veteran guys.
Nothing is solid. Everything is fluid as far as our roster is concerned. We've got, you know, again, we've got an evaluation process we've gone through. We know what we'd like to do, and we're going to go forward with those decisions.
We've done an evaluation on Dwayne. We feel pretty good about who he is. He's done a nice job here. You know, he played, especially at the end of the season, a lot. So we've got good tape to evaluate, and we saw some pretty good growth. But, you know, we have to react what happens in front of us. You know, we don't have the first pick Cincinnati does. So based on that, you know, we have to decide the direction we want to head from there.
Well, we're going to start with our GM, Mike Tannenbaum, because you've made decisions like this or at least been in this position. You know, if you're the Washington Redskins, Mike, do you pass on the best player on the board or do you consider drafting a quarterback?
You strongly consider taking a quarterback. The verb that Ron Rivera is using right now in the building is we're going to scour every possibility to get the Washington Redskins better. And at the end of the day, if they make the determination, candidly, that a lot of people around the league feel that a healthy Tua Tagovailoa is a better football player for Dwayne Haskins for the next 10 years, then you go ahead and you draft Tua. And when you look around the league, what's interesting to me, it started a year ago with Arizona when they drafted Josh Rosen, and then they moved on because they got Kyle Murray. There's a number of young quarterbacks, Daniel Jones in New York, Dwayne Haskins, and also Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. When you're inherited in this league and you're not drafted by a certain head coach, everything is up for grabs. So I think this Tua debate is real, and it makes a lot of sense to me.
Victor, Tua aside for just a minute, let's start with what we do know, and that's right now Dwayne Haskins is the Redskins quarterback. Have you seen enough, or what else would you need to see from him to make you think, all right, I can build my future around this guy?
Well, I think he's shown flashes that he could be a franchise-style quarterback, but I just think I don't think he's played enough games to show the consistency of being that franchise guy, of understanding what it takes to be that franchise guy, both on and off the field. Now, obviously, Ron Rivera's coming in. This isn't a guy that he brought in there. He's obviously his first-year coach with the Washington Redskins. So I know he wants, in his first tenure, he wants to bring in guys that he can trust, that he can bring in there and be confident that they'll go out there and perform. And most importantly, they'll be his guys, right? Guys that he can vouch for in that meeting room when they say, hey, what's up with him? So I think Ron Rivera's looking at this like, hey, there's some guys out there in college and in this draft that we're looking at, and all positions are open.
First thing that comes to mind for me, for everybody who follows football, whether you're a Redskins fan or not, is buckle up. We've got 50 days until the NFL draft. 50 days. So we've got all kinds of stories that might be in this family of ideas, right? Hey, the Redskins on paper have a young developmental quarterback. Could they potentially be a Tua Tagovailoa suitor? Should they just draft Chase Young, this prodigious defensive end talent who fits a need, who's probably the best player in the draft, who happens to, by the way, be from the D.C. area? A lot of things of this nature. We'll talk about it with the Lions at pick 3 and the Dolphins at pick 5 and, heck, the Chargers at pick 6. So get ready for stories like this. But let's just sort of deal in what we know. Ron Rivera, as Mike mentioned, was not the person responsible for drafting Dwayne Haskins. And this offseason, actually really might have been just the end of the regular season, Ron Rivera became arguably the most coveted head coaching candidate available. The Redskins worked expediently to make sure they could hire him because they thought he'd get a job elsewhere, including perhaps the Giants with Dave Gettleman, his former GM in Carolina. The Redskins hired Ron Rivera and handed him the keys to the car. Whatever he wants to do, and I'm not saying everything just will be done flippantly, but if Ron Rivera is convinced on Tua and not convinced on Dwayne Haskins, then sure, it's possible. At the same time, I think there is enough to see at the end of last season from Dwayne Haskins that you could convince yourself, you know something, with a little bit of work under Scott Turner's tutelage, maybe we can get Dwayne Haskins playing consistently like last year. And oh, by the way, you think Jack Del Rio, our former colleague here, thought about the possibility of drafting Chase Young when he was in negotiation with Ron about taking that job? I'm not saying it's a done deal, but don't you think he'd say to him, like,
listen, I think Jack Del Rio is like, knock, 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 I'll just stay in your office
right.
until the draft.
That's Mike, right. I had a good thing going here with
him. Yeah, no, there's no question. Let me ask you this, Mike, and we know for a fact that Coach Rivera had conversations with ownership before he took this job, and you would believe that there is some ownership that he's allowed to take in this, but how much influence will he have in this draft, in your opinion?
It sounds like he'll have the ultimate influence, and I think there's a lot of health to that in terms of I've been in that situation before where the head coach is the final decision maker, because really what his job is to find what he's looking for at every position and then have the personnel department execute that vision and serve the head coach. So I think you're going to get a lot more consistency in the decision making in terms of what front seven players look like, what receivers look like. And then ultimately he has to sit there and take the long, sober view and say, for the Washington Redskins, are we better off with, let's just say, Dwayne Haskins and this great pass rusher, or do we go all in on Tua for the next 10 years? It's not unlike what Arizona had to do a year ago and say, are we better off with Josh Rosen and Nick Bosa, or are we going to flush out Rosen and we're going to go ahead and take Kyler Murray?
I think the biggest thing with Ron Rivera is that, especially after speaking with him during his time in Carolina during a visit there, he wants to put a team together that's going to go out there and compete. And I think whatever that takes, whatever, you know, if we have to sacrifice Dwayne Haskins or he won't be our guy, whatever the case may be, he wants to put a team out there that can compete and play at a high level and play hard. And whatever that takes, Ron Rivera's going to do it.
And Vic, that's an interesting point, though. Like, so if you're a scout for the Redskins, you know that the grade should reflect that maybe we'll take a little less talent for a little bit higher of a motor. And that's okay. And that's healthy because at least everyone's speaking the same language.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the Redskins pick number 2 just behind the Cincinnati Bengals, who are expected to take Joe Burrow. The Jacksonville Jaguars have agreed to trade cornerback A.J. Bouye to the Denver Broncos in exchange for a 4th-round pick in the draft. This is according to our Adam Schefter yesterday. The trade cannot be processed until the new league year begins on March 18th, but nevertheless, it's in place. Former Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey weighed in via Twitter, free all my dogs, laugh out loud. There is no love lost between Ramsey and the Jags. And speaking of the dogs, here they are. Just 2 years ago, the Jags were a quarter away from a trip to the Super Bowl. But now their defense looks completely different from that game. Their star corners, Jalen Ramsey and Bouye, moving on. Yannick Ngakoue has publicly said he doesn't want to play for the Jags. And look, players get disgruntled. It's part of the process. Having said that, a lot of smoke here, Mike, I think anyway, for there not to be some sort of fire. So from a front office perspective, what's not gone right here in Jacksonville?
Yeah, and of all the things that you mentioned, Yannick Ngakoue coming out publicly and saying he doesn't want to be there.
And getting ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, that really stings. There's a big problem there. And look, it may or may not have been Tom Coughlin, but if I'm Doug Marrone, this is an opportunity to fix what's going on with Yannick Ngakoue and address that whole list that we just looked at. I would go fly and see him. I would bring my yellow pad. I would ask open-ended questions and say, what is wrong with the Jaguars? And candidly, I would do that with 5 to 10 veteran players that you respect, people like yourself, Victor, when you played. Be a great listener. And then that's my action plan for the offseason. We have to fix this. Whether it was Tom Coughlin or not, that's irrelevant. That's ancient history. What do we have to do? Because you're in the state of Florida, so there's no state income tax. You practice and play on grass. It should be a destination, and nobody wants to be there. We have to find out why and then go fix it.
But, you know, you have to be willing to listen. I'm not saying they are or they aren't, but you have to be able to self-assess and say, hey, maybe we have played a part in this. because there are players in that locker room, Victor, who still want to compete and win games. How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's tough, especially for a head coach, and especially if I'm one of the younger guys in the locker room, right, and I see all these veteran players leaving and not wanting to be there, and I'm sitting there maybe in my second year like, wait, what's going on here? So I think Doug Marrone, being the coach that he is, a straight shooter that he is, has to have those conversations, not just with those veteran guys that he needs to sit down with, but all the guys on the team. First day of OTAs, the first day of, you know, off-season program, you have a team meeting and you talk to the entire team and the players and let them know what the plan is for this year, how you want them to compete, what level of attitude that they need to bring to the game each and every day, and see where that takes you, because right now it's a little in flux. And if I'm at home and I play for the Jacksonville Jaguars, I have a lot of questions that I want to ask.
Yeah, you're watching this just like we are, which exactly. I think would be disconcerting as somebody who's involved but not there to see it.
We all feel pretty warm and fuzzy about the San Francisco 49ers right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made the Super Bowl, had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter of that game. For the most part, we feel really good about the overall trajectory.
So.
The 49ers are coming off of a 5-year stretch that was bad. The Jaguars were the 49ers just a couple of years ago. 5 straight seasons of picking the top 5 in the NFL draft, which means you have one of the 5 worst records in football. Then they make it to the AFC Championship game. They've got the king, Tom Brady, in his house, up 10 points in the fourth quarter. They squander that lead. And 2 years later, we're talking about a complete and utter overhaul. What the Jaguars need to do, and I'm not sure whose call this necessarily is, whether it's Dave Caldwell, their GM, whether it's the Khan family who owns the team, somebody needs to plant the flag as to what this team's identity is going forward. And the harsh reality may be that they're going to be following the Miami playbook from last year. They may need to do exactly what the Dolphins are a year into doing, tearing it down, moving on from high-priced veterans to get any kind of draft compensation you can get, drafting well, and finding players that fit for the next 5 years.
So if that's the case, then, Field, when you look at the quarterback position and you got Nick Foles, who was your big free agent acquisition last year, do you get out from under that and out for Gardner Minshew? Do you look for the future? What do you do?
Sounds easy to get rid of Nick Foles, right?
I don't know.
Rock and a hard play situation.
I would
Wendy.
Say that,
We've
yes.
been talking all offseason about there is more supply than demand among starting quarterbacks. And the result of that is going to be some of these quarterbacks that are going to be available, already are available, are going to get contracts that they do not want, that they just accept because it's the best they can get. Well, Nick Foles is already on a pretty lucrative deal. Trying to trade him away and convincing somebody to pay Nick Foles the money that he is due over the next 3 seasons, when you're not exactly dealing from a spot of leverage, because if I don't want Nick Foles, I can move on to several other options. I'm just not so sure that the Jaguars, even if they wanted to, have an obvious path, a suitor that makes complete and utter sense to acquire Nick Foles. Could they move on from him? Yes, but it's not as easy as it may seem.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Free agency, it's all about timing. And there's not only so many veteran free agent quarterbacks, there's probably going to be at least 4 taken in the first round. So I agree with Field from a standpoint, if they say, Minshew's our guy, we want to move on from Nick Foles, they are operating from a position of weakness, not strength. They may have to eat part of the contract, which you see sometimes in the league now, just to get out from under the rest of it.
Yeah, this team is struggling. They're in full overhaul.
It'll really be interesting
to see, A, what they do with Nick Foles, and B, what they do with the rest of that roster.
It's just hard for me to believe, really, that, to your point, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the upset in Foxborough, and this is an entirely
somebody at this roundtable picked them to win a Super Bowl this past year, but I'm not going to point any elbows.
That was me. Anyway, we'll continue to follow the situation in Jacksonville. Among other things, Chris Harris Jr., who will be a free agent, had this to say on the news about Bouye, said that he's headed to Denver. Congrats, little bro. Wish you the best. Well, this might be one of the deepest wide receiver classes we have seen in quite some time. Henry Ruggs III ran a 4.27 in the 40. That's tied for Marquise Goodwin for the 4th fast since 06. Then there's Oklahoma CeeDee Lamb, an impressive leaping catch in the end zone fade drill. Also ran a 4.5 in the 40. And finally, Alabama's Jerry Jeudy ran a 4.45 in the 40, which was tied for the 10th fastest time among wide receivers. In total, 20 wide receivers ran under 4.5 at this year's combine. I don't know what we're feeding folks, but they are fast. And after the combine, yesterday actually, Todd McShay released his first mock draft. It's 3.0. He has 7 wide receivers in the first round. That would be tied for the most in the first round in the common draft era. Look, it is the combine. We get a little bump. You know, it's like the market gets a little bump after the weekend, and then we sort of simmer back down. But having said that, Mike, who did impress you in terms of this wide receiving core in Indianapolis?
Henry Ruggs, not only because of his time speed, but when you watch him play, he had 24 career touchdowns, it was almost one out of every four catches was for a touchdown, which is remarkable over the course of his career. He also, as a former receiver, Victor, you'll appreciate this, he covers kicks, so that talks about his toughness and his competitiveness. And when you go back to the Super Bowl, that was a really tightly contested game, and we saw the game-changing speed that Tyreek Hill had. Henry Ruggs not only runs fast in the time speed, but he plays fast as well. And I think that'll be a great debate about CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, and Henry Ruggs, but if I had to pick one, I'm taking Ruggs.
You really can't go wrong with either of those receivers, to be honest.
Well, having said that, in field, I'm going to ask you about the free agent market in just a minute. But, Victor, I will say this. You know, we talk about the depth in this class, but the last 5 years or so, a lot of these marquee names, these first-rounders, I don't necessarily think they've reached the bar we've set. Why is that?
Well, I think some of it could be due to fit. I think sometimes you just don't go into the right situation or the right place that's going to utilize all your abilities, not because they can't use you, but just because of the overall team, what they're doing or what their offense is built around may not necessarily suit you and your skill level. So I think that's probably what we've seen the past few years, but not this year. I think this year there's
not this time. Doesn't matter where they go.
There's a fleet of receivers in this draft that are going to be, and I even think you're going to see a skew in free agency wide receivers because of the crop that's in this rookie class coming out of the draft.
I like that fleet. Didn't that just sound impressive? A fleet of wide receivers in the draft class. So having said that, how will it affect the free agent market?
I don't think it's going to dramatically impact the top of the free agent market, which could include Amari Cooper for the Dallas Cowboys, who looks like they're staring down the very real possibility of franchise tagging Dak Prescott, which would mean that Amari Cooper, if he desires, can hit the open market. Same thing goes for Robbie Anderson, a player that I think many people believe is amongst the best young wide receivers that will be available in free agency. If you look at some of the other names on this list, you see three veterans in A.J. Green, franchise tag, Manuel Sanders in his 30s. Same goes for Randall Cobb, who maybe he's entertained by the idea of now staying in Dallas because of Mike McCarthy. But think about last year. We had this incredible run of first-round pass rushers that we knew were going to be really, really good. It started with Nick Bosa, but even someone like Quinnen Williams is an interior rusher, Josh Allen, the list goes on. Really, really good class last year. And then think about players like Trey Flowers and Za'Darius Smith. What happened to them? A month before free agency, you know what they did? They cashed it in. Trey Flowers, really solid player, got an $18 million per year. Same thing with Za'Darius Smith, 4 years, $66 million with the Packers. You are going to pay for proven commodities in free agency because as much as you could go through 100 different simulations and mock drafts, unless you know who you're getting in the draft, it's going to be an uncertainty and you're going to pay big.
Well, we see it often. It's that middle class, right? And the middle class sometimes gets affected more than those marquee producers.
You know, Wendy, there's also a third very important bucket. We're talking about, you know, the veteran free agents, the Amari Coopers, the Henry Ruggs, and sometimes there's great undrafted free agent wide receivers that could go 99 yards against your own team.
Oh,
so,
man.
How many times do we have to see this, Victor? If we just make a tackle, we're going to win the game.
I'll go watch it all day.
Honestly. Yeah, man. He's like, do that beautiful footage.
Well, you know, at least you didn't go to my album. Oh, no, you did that too.
What on earth is your excuse, Mike Tannenbaum?
Unacceptable. It's unacceptable. So we could talk about Ruggs. We could talk about A.J. Green, but undrafted free agents that go 99 against you, those are the ones that...
I'm not lying either. I'm not just saying this because you're here. I do love Victor. That's true. But I love when those undrafted free agents, those guys, those undrafted players come up and produce and grab the headline.
Nobody loves it more than I. And it's always, those undrafted guys always have a unique story, right? Once you dig into where they come from and what they do, there's always some story there that either led them to be undrafted or they just have a cool story in general.
See, he's too nice to say much, but you got to be, ha, 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 ha. Sorry, guys.
Uh-huh.
All right, I can't believe we're doing this without Jeff Saturday. He was here for the first 2 days of the week. Now he's not with us, but this is for you, Jeff. Let's talk offensive line standout, Mike.
Yeah, well, let's go to Mekhi Becton. This guy was a great player on tape. He ran 5-1-1 at 364 pounds. He's faster than Jimmy Garoppolo. That is a freak of nature. It's really remarkable.
This guy is faster than Jimmy Garoppolo. All right.
Another one right here, Tristan Wirfs, who was an absolute stud over the weekend, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. He looked good at all the drills. Another Iowa offensive lineman. This draft is loaded with offensive tackles early in draft, and he's going to go early as well.
All right. Well, the combine in the books, and some folks got a bump. We'll see if they can sustain that momentum until April's draft, just 50 days away. In Todd McShay's mock draft 3.0, his first since Indianapolis, he has four quarterbacks in the first round, with Joe Burrow number one overall. The big mover, Jordan Love, who's not MXJ's mock draft 2.0, but projected now at 3.0, six overall to the Chargers. Before we talk about that, let's start at the top, and that is assuming it's Joe Burrow. Mike, look, tremendous college football season, his last round at LSU, probably about as good as you can get. But is he the sure thing that we seem to have sort of pronounced him at this point?
Well, because he's had this great year, he will be certainly the first pick, the presumptive number one overall pick. However, in the draft rooms, the two big concerns would be, one, what happened at Ohio State? Urban Meyer knows what a good quarterback looks like. He couldn't beat out JT Barrett and Dwayne Haskins, good quarterbacks, but not certainly elite quarterbacks.
As a GM, would that give you pause?
Absolutely.
Would you want to know why?
I'm going to drill down on that. And then secondly, the other question I would ask, guys, when you went to LSU, your first year was good, not great. You go into this year, maybe third, fourth round pick. So you have 1 year of great production. Those would be the two questions I really would want to drill down on.
He's going to be the first pick. You said the
He will be.
We're 50 days out. At what point do we just say Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, right? Like,
pretty soon.
Let's just kick the drama to the side here. So we're not going to overthink things too much. You're not going to microanalyze things too much. I think if you're the Bengals, the part of your evaluation that led up to, I would imagine, conclusively deciding about Joe Burrow is the numbers are spectacular. But the oldest rule in football scouting is that you draft traits, not production. Now, obviously, the production is a byproduct of those traits, but it's looking back at what Joe Burrow did a really, really good job of last year and saying, all right, if he didn't have the best wide receiver group and an excellent tight end and a great offensive line,
which he did,
how would this look? And when you go back and you look through it, you see a lot of the stuff that's unique and uncommon, and which is why, despite all of that talent, you realize Joe Burrow is the kind of guy that you could potentially build a franchise around for 10 to 12 years. I'm more likely, I put it this way, if I had to make the decision to bet my fortune on Joe Burrow or not, I'm leaning towards bet my fortune on Joe Burrow being successful in the NFL.
All right. It's a great unknown, right? What, 5 years from now, we'll know. Hindsight 2020. So, again, we agree, Burrow, the number one pick. Tua is right in the mix, but because of health questions, let's just say Tua now number two somewhere. Who's the third quarterback off the board? Who should be the third quarterback off the board?
This is easy for me. It's Justin Herbert.
All three times.
Yeah. And if Justin Herbert, by the way, was the quarterback at LSU with that team, wouldn't we be talking about the first overall pick, the Heisman Trophy, maybe a national champion? You know, the other night in Indy, he throws, and as that workout went on, his deep ball accuracy was phenomenal. We're looking at it now, and Joe Burrow did nothing. Let's go back to the Senior Bowl. Joe Burrow did nothing. Justin Herbert, MVP of the Senior Bowl. You go against Utah and Wisconsin late in the season. He played really well. And if they had beaten Auburn, which they didn't, the Oregon defense gave up a late score. You're talking about a one-loss team, a three-point loss to Arizona State on the road. I love Justin Herbert just from a standpoint. The other axiom, which is the tape sets the floor, so your baseline talent sets the floor and your character sets the ceiling. This guy, he's a great kid. I know he's a little bit introverted, which is not ideal for the position, but there's so much to like about him. And if we go by what we see, be it the production or the traits, both those boxes are checked for Justin Herbert.
So let's remind ourselves a little bit about how things sort of work on the media side. I know Mike is still new to this, but a quick study clearly is that we have these perceptions of what players are, how they stack up in the draft board. Justin Herbert has done everything right so far in the pre-draft process. Went to the Senior Bowl, was great there. Went to the Combine, impressive there. And yet his stock has seemingly been like, you know, plus or minus a few spots.
Practice player of the week, too, wasn't he at the Senior Bowl? In addition.
Really good week.
Performing well.
Jordan Love of Utah State, though, is sort of the wild card of this quarterback class because for a variety of reasons. He played at Utah State. They went 7-6. They played LSU this year. They got whacked. But is that his problem? Is that his issue? And so often we look at just the raw numbers. And his interception numbers were, you know, they're alarming from last season. You got to go back, and we were just talking about how you have to go back and watch Joe Burrow and compartmentalize how much of a success is Joe Burrow doing good things alongside excellent players, or is it how much is just Joe Burrow doing really good things? Same thing for Jordan Love. All right, is it the collection of players around him that sort of limited him, or as you look at these numbers, compare these two players, line resume, the guy on the left wins. That's Justin Herbert. But Jordan Love is a player that is fascinating, and I think the reason why his value is perceived is skyrocketing is maybe more those of us on this side catching up to where I think some in the NFL view Jordan Love.
I do think it's interesting, though, that you say, and you're right, that one guy does everything right and, in addition, has quality statistics. And yet we are clearly gravitating at this point for Jordan Love.
Well, I would say the other point here, context is everything. If we could draft Jordan Love in the back half of the first round and say we're going to develop him, I love that idea. I don't like it. I love it. He has a really high ceiling because of all the points you made. Really good athlete, big, can make all the throws. However, for him to go in the top 10, we've seen in recent history, Jameis Winston, Sam Darnold, if you turn the ball over in college, that doesn't magically get better overnight. Jordan Love led the nation in interceptions. I don't think that changes overnight. As you mentioned, they were 7-6. Not only did they have opportunities against LSU, but if you watch the Boise game, the BYU game, he struggled in games that if he had played well, I could see a top 10 discussion. But based on him not playing well against the better defenses, I don't think he's going to get better overnight. I'm intrigued by him as well, but I think context is so important here because if we're taking him in the top 10, the expectations is he's playing right away. And we saw last year, Haskins struggled early, Daniel Jones struggled early. It's going to take a minute.
Last thing to say, let's not overlook the fact that a couple of years ago, the Chiefs chased the upside of Patrick Mahomes, who had some flaws in his resume. Too many turnovers in college at times. Defense was terrible. Texas Tech, he had no choice. And he's become the best quarterback in the NFL. So people are saying, hey, this guy, he's not going to be – we don't find Patrick Mahomes every year, okay?
Right.
But if you have a guy that may have the highest upside, people are fixating, hey, let's go for the guy that has the highest ceiling.
Ed Field, you're making my point for me, which is he sat for the first 15 games of his rookie year and learned from a great veteran in Alex
Smith. I think he would be the first to tell you served him well.
And Andy Reid. And that's where – if you could tell me that Jordan Love is going to sit for the first year behind a great veteran leader and a really good – quarterback coach and Andy Reid, that's ideal.
The future is now. Tom Brady about to hit the open market. He ranks second all-time in passing touchdowns and pass yards, and his six Super Bowl rings are the most by a single player in NFL history. He now needs two hands. We will welcome in Jeff Darlington. And Jeff, let's start, first of all, with just an assessment of the market. How is it shaping up for Brady's services outside of New England?
Well, it's pretty good, actually, right now. Now, I need to qualify that because it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a bunch of teams that Tom Brady is ready to choose and vice versa. But what I can tell you is I've spoken to executives with eight different teams. So at least eight teams right now are at least monitoring the situation with Tom Brady with interest in potentially bringing him onto their squad. Now, that's varying levels of interest. So I've talked to a few executives on teams. Actually, I can point to four that would sign him right now. They would literally pen to paper, let's get this done. That doesn't mean that those are teams that Brady himself would join. Right now, it is about surveying the landscape on both sides. It's those teams assessing whether they definitely want Brady on their team, and it's Brady looking at where he wants to be. And then in the coming weeks, that marriage can potentially happen. So really where we're at right now in this whole world, in this whole thing, is just both sides trying to figure out exactly where they fit.
Jeff, thank you. And that's what the next 2.5 weeks will be about. March 18th, the day the new league year begins, which means, of course, two free agency officially opens on that date. All right, all right, all right. I'm ready for Mike Tannenbaum. Because here's what we're going to do. You know, that means Tom gets in his jet.
Yep.
Someone's jet. And he's going to fly around and we're going to make our pitch, right? Whether it's in San Francisco or Tennessee with his buddy Vrabel. So if you are these teams, he's a free agent. He gets to pick this time. First time in his career, which is sort of unbelievable at this point after the 20-year mark. Make your pitch, okay, Mike? And are we starting with close to his hometown, San Francisco?
Well, I've been waiting 20 years for this one. I get to refer to Tom Brady.
Yeah, instead of cursing him.
This is easy. It's about your legacy. We were 6 minutes away from winning the Super Bowl, Tom. You could come home, and we're going to talk about the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to talk about Steve Young and Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, and we're going to add you to our legacy. We were 6 minutes away with this incredible defense. We're going to add you, Tom. You're going to be a champion in your hometown. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, I mean, you got some fellas you can trot out, too, right? There's some pretty big names that Tom grew up watching.
And what I would do is I would have all those guys on a plane, and we would fly to wherever Tom
Jerry is. Jerry Rice is on the plane.
Bring your gold jacket, too.
That's right.
Bring your gold jacket.
Oh, look, here they are. They're going to put them all on a plane.
Yeah, bring your gold jacket,
We're mindful of the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo is on this team, right?
Well,
Jimmy Garoppolo, who signed for $72 more million over the next 3 years. Now, for those that are asking, could they get out of the contract? The answer is yes. They would have a $4.2 million dead charge. But still, Very, very interesting dynamic.
Well, look, you make a good point. Here's George Kittle, and he was certainly a big part of the San Francisco 49ers' success this season. Let's run it back, Ken. You know what? A little subtle, like, this is my guy. He hears the same thing other people are hearing.
Yeah, it seems like he's diffusing.
Okay, now.
Tom Brady doesn't even look right in this red situation.
Well, I know, it does.
I can't even picture this.
So, right, well, hold your fire.
About to get funky, isn't it?
It's about to get nuts. Okay. Let's go on down to the South. You know, South. I'm a big fan of that. Take me to Nashville, please.
Yeah, this is easy. Head coach, former teammate, Mike Vrabel. Hey, Tom, we got to the AFC Championship game without you. We got you there with Ryan Tannehill, somebody that wasn't even starting at the beginning of the year. We have a really good offensive line. We're going to re-sign our right tackle, Jack Conklin. We got Derrick Henry. We got A.J. Brown. We got Jonnu Smith. All these pieces that are so important for you, Tom. We could get to the Super Bowl this year. By the way, the state of Tennessee.
I was going
to
say, no state income tax.
No state income tax. Massachusetts does. We're going to practice and play on grass. I'm going to take care of you. I know the positions you need to be successful. You're going to be happy here. You're going to be fulfilled here. And you're going to be a champion here.
This is interesting to me because obviously him and Vrabel are friends. And they understand each other. They were just FaceTiming. They were at a basketball game not too long ago with Julian Edelman. And they're FaceTiming and they're talking to one another.
And we all get to read lips.
So it's just like, what's going on here? Could there really be something between those two guys? We'll see.
All right.
I think the tax point might be a little bit overblown, Mike, only because Tom Brady doesn't pay for a single thing in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, this is true.
Literally nothing.
The man is not buying a meal in Massachusetts.
Very true.
Okay. Now, I got to tell you, it's going to be a hard sell if I'm Tom Brady and have played 20 years in New England. But nevertheless, I trust your judgment, Michael.
Okay, this is out of control now.
Hey, Tom, the pen's in your hand. It's a blank slate.
You had the pen.
And we're going to start a new legacy here. And from a football standpoint, let me tell you something. We have a guy, Darren Waller, a little bit under the radar, but we've seen what you've done with tight ends before. Trent Brown is a tackle you played with. Colton Miller is a guy that's a really underrated tackle. And by the way, we know how important TB12 is to you. We're going to open up scores of these TB12 centers all through Las Vegas. It's going to be
extend
your brand.
Geographically
diversify your company. So we're going to do everything we can to make you successful, not only on the field, Tom, but off the field.
Talk to me about his family, Mike. Do you think the family wants to be in Vegas?
They don't have to go, right? They fly back on one, you know?
Yeah, but they're going to be there. The kids have to spend some time in Las Vegas. You can't be in Circus the whole time.
No, but maybe they stay somewhere else and go to school, and you just a season.
Nothing says
Vegas like working out.
Well, I was just going to say, do the TB12 centers include like a hydration corner for those that are getting ready to depart on the way out?
We'll have TB12 waters.
You do get a new stadium, but I think, honestly, out of all those points, although I shouldn't say this because I believe wholeheartedly that Tom Brady wants to win, but the open checkbook can't be a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you got my attention.
And the state of Nevada, again, no state income tax. It's a good quality of life. And again, if you don't want your family there, that's okay. We'll give you Mondays off. John Gruden's giving other veterans Mondays off.
This is my point. Go back, see the kids.
There we go. I guess you can live in L.A. Put the kids in L.A.
Oh, yeah, fair. Okay. All right. Adventure's got it figured out. All right. Now, again, they will have to make a pitch in a way they haven't done so before. And I'm not sure they're totally comfortable with that. But let's assume for a minute they are. Then pitch me on New England because the devil you know, Mike.
Yeah, and Wendy, I'll tell you this. The pitch here is pretty easy, which is when we look at our sport, for whatever reason, Brett Favre, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, they didn't finish their career in the same spot. Tom, do you know where opening day is? It's at Gillette Stadium. Do you know where Gillette Stadium? We're going to announce this on opening day. It's at 12 Tom Brady Way. And you know what else we're going to do for you, Tom? For the rest, until the day you die, Gillette Stadium is going to be yours 12 days a year, so you can host any charitable event you want there. We're going to have a legacy second to none that goes well beyond your playing days in New England. Not only are you going to go down as an all-time great player, but when they talk about the great citizens of the state of Massachusetts, you're going to be mentioned there because you're going to do so much for this community. We're going to have boulevards named after you. We're going to have events here that you're going to orchestrate and be in charge of. So there's nothing within reason that we can't collectively accomplish once your playing days are over.
And what do you say when I say, yeah, but I got to have some pieces in place? You haven't done that. Last year, I know you tried, but it fell short. I can't do this alone, especially not at 43. What will you do?
We're going to franchise Joe Tooney, the right guard. He's going nowhere. And here's three receivers we're going to look at. If we can't get Emmanuel Sanders, maybe we're going to draft one. But within reason, we all know we came up short last year. You did, Tom. We did as an organization. We're going to improve in 2020. It starts with you being back here at quarterback.
And also maybe say that, like, we didn't have great weapons at all last year, and we are one play away from having the number two seed in the AFC and having a first-round bye for, like, the ninth straight year, like, you know, put a little trust in this front office and this scouting staff that somehow gets overlooked still, that can find
Which
pieces.
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't. But we always just say, ah, well, Tom Brady. Come on.
Yeah,
give
no,
me a break.
No, I agree with you.
Randy, I'll tell you what. If Tom Coughlin or anybody in that front office sat me down and told me there's going to be an 80 cruise way somewhere around Giant Stadium, sign me up. Put the pen down.
I like it. Okay.
He had me
there.
Right. I was like,
what would you call it? 12 Tom Brady way?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I don't think any of this is far-fetched. The question is, you know, what's the most important for both sides?
Yes. And also, if you're Robert Kraft and that gets the deal, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, of course
the guy's only won six Super Bowls.
I think he's probably even willing to pay market value at this point. But, it looks like there's
some That's another thing also with Tom. He's always been top 20 in terms of what he's been paid, you know, APY over the years. Does he want to have that top 10, top 5 pay raise? We'll see. I don't think money's a big issue for him. Obviously, it hasn't been. It's more so been about the team over the years. But, hey, now's the time.
Listen, right? I would also argue, why not 7? We've gotten 6 together.
Exactly.
Why not 7? And that is one thing nobody else can pitch. There is so much to like about Isaiah Simmons. Of course, I like him in part because he's from Clemson. But nevertheless, Mike, what do you see when you watch him?
Oh, I think this is a new age defensive player. And we talk about versatility is really the foundation of what his game is all about. And if you look around the league right now, what's going on, starting on the offensive side of the ball field, we're talking about positionless players that are playing on offense. And if we go to the tape here, you know, starting off, we're looking at Tyreek Hill, great wide receiver, but here he is in the backfield getting the ball as a running back. It's all about getting an athlete in space and because he's so fast. Deebo Samuel came out as a wide receiver from South Carolina. Here he is in the backfield, another guy that has a positionless sort of responsibility. And as a defensive coach, how do we stop these guys? Well, look at Isaiah Simmons, Boston College. You're looking for instincts, short area quickness. Flea flicker, makes a sack. That's hard to do at 238 pounds. Now we go against Ohio State. He's 40 yards off the line of scrimmage. He's playing in space at 238 pounds. Makes this incredible interception. So what are we looking at? We talk about guys like Samuel. We talk about guys like Hill, positionless on offense. Isaiah Simmons could be one of these transformational players. He could be a positionless defensive player because athletically, every team's going to be looking at how do we defend Samuel? How do we defend Tyreek Hill? Simmons may be the answer.
He checks every box.
And you heard Dabo say that, and he's right.
Every box is checked. He fits all 32. And think about how during these coaching changes we're talking about earlier in the show, we talked about does Dwayne Haskins fit what Ron Rivera wants in a quarterback. Isaiah Simmons is a timeless 10-year chess piece. Doesn't matter who your defensive coordinator is. If you can't figure out how to use him, it's not an Isaiah Simmons problem. It's a you problem, right?
You know, what's interesting. You always say, you know, you have to know where these guys are. Now we're going to start saying we've got to know what these guys are. Where, what?
And there's two other players. Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's now with the Steelers. Sure. Derwin James of the Chargers are similar. But what he did at the Combine is unbelievable. To run sub-4.4 at 238 pounds and to have that tape to be able to blitz against Boston College, to be able to play 40 yards off the ball against Ohio – that is really remarkable, and he would be desired by all 32 teams.
Sure. And he's going to embrace it. We know that. So Derwin James' health has been the issue. He missed a bunch of time this year after missing some time as a rookie as well. But when he plays, incredibly impactful. And for Minkah Fitzpatrick, the big question was, is he going to embrace this jack-of-all-trades role, or does he want to be sort of a center fielder? For Isaiah Simmons, like, he's been doing this already. Like,
yeah,
this has been
not?
His role.
And it's working.
And it's working. It has brought him to a higher level than probably playing just one position. What if he was just a linebacker? I'm not sure the league values just a linebacker to potentially be in the conversation for the third overall pick.
Yeah,
but a guy is it all, like this guy?
Check, check, check. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
If it's not broke, not fix it. He would be a seamless fit for just start. I mean, honestly, understanding Chase Young is probably a slightly higher, slightly more well-regarded prospect. He'd be a great fit at pick 2 for the Redskins, pick 3 for the Lions. I think pick 4 for the Giants would make a lot of sense. Heck, put him with Derwin James. Pick 6 with the Los Angeles Chargers.
Phillip Rivers has been an iron man, and he has done so all with one team, and that's the Chargers. It really is the end of an era, Mike. It's sort of a different feeling to think he'll play somewhere else. But the possibility, he's definitely going to play somewhere else if he plays, and it seems like Indianapolis is a name that keeps recurring. Is this a good fit if that's the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And just coming back from the combine, talking to a number of people around the league, barring something unforeseen, everyone expects Philip Rivers to wind up with the Colts. Just from a standpoint, it makes so much sense. Frank Reich, the current head coach of the Colts, is his offensive coordinator at the Chargers. They have a good offensive line. They're looking to bring somebody in to possibly compete with Jacoby Brissett. So obviously nothing's done, but it just makes a lot of sense. And to put Philip Rivers in the best chance to be successful, this is a great offensive line. If I was any quarterback, including Tom Brady, this would be a place I would look at first because you could be protected. And as a veteran quarterback, that's something you're going to need. So Rivers going to Indy makes a lot of sense. Pair it with a young emerging defense, a good offensive line. I think this gives them a real chance to compete in 2020.
What does this mean for Jacoby Brissett?
Well, if they sign Philip Rivers, all of a sudden Jacoby Brissett goes back to a place that he actually is familiar with, which is being the backup to a quarterback that is regarded as a legend. But Jacoby Brissett's got a $7 million roster bonus due not long after the league year begins. Now, it's fully guaranteed, which means he's getting it. The question would be, if you're the Colts and you have an agreement in place with Philip Rivers, either during the legal negotiating period or the opening moments of free agency, do you work hard to see if somebody else might be willing to take on Jacoby Brissett and pay that $7 million? It's not a totally prohibitive cost. Ultimately, if you look at the deal you did with Jacoby Brissett last year, it's still sort of an average-level quarterback deal, and he has been about an average-level quarterback. But ultimately, with Brian Hoyer already signed up for at least this year, do you really need three quarterbacks that, you know, the NFL, it's actually uncommon for teams to carry three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster. Someone seems like the odd man out there, and Jacoby Brissett may have eyes on starting somewhere else. But back to the point we made throughout the show, a lot of quarterbacks available, not necessarily as many jobs available.
Yeah, I've said it all week long. It is a game of musical chairs. Yes. I'm not 100% sure everybody will have a chair, or at least the one they want, when the music stops. I will ask you this, a little bit of an unfair assessment, I think, of Brissett this year. I mean, so many of the weapons he would need and, sure, and would benefit from were hurt. It was just an off year. Have we seen enough? Has there been a solid litmus test there in terms of a starting quarterback?
Well, I don't think so, especially in Jacoby Brissett's case. I think early on in the season when he had his full, you know, gamut of receivers and playmakers, you saw a different guy. He was making plays. We loved him the first month of the season. We were like, this guy's blowing it up. And then obviously in the second half of that season, the back half of it, it was just some decision issues and kind of up and down in his play. It wasn't as consistent as we saw in the first month. Obviously, that was due to a plethora of injuries. Obviously, his number one receiver, T.Y. Hilton, in and out of the lineup with some injury issues and things like that. So I don't think we've seen enough from Jacoby Brissett, but obviously when you have the opportunity to bring in a legend, like you said, Field, it's just one of those situations where you have to understand they have to take a chance on Philip Rivers and move on from
that. I'm one of those people that likes to see guys finish with the same team, but I will say it was time. I understand that. And I think it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Philip Rivers.
Well, Mike Schefter says it's happening. So we got this.
Oh, Mike Schefter.
All right, okay. There, Field Mortensen.
You did say the all-important phrase, barring anything unforeseen, but that's a little catch-all there. You didn't see it coming. Count Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts as another QB entering the league who's equally dangerous with both his arm and his legs. He led the FBS in yards per pass attempt, ranked second among quarterbacks in rush yards, and then last week at the combine, he ran a 4.59 40. Here's Hurts last week in Indy.
Like I said earlier, I don't think there's a ceiling on my game. I think there isn't a limit, simply. I would say the sky's the limit, but I don't think that's even a limit. So the dynamic ability I have, able to make every throw, you know, get nasty with my legs if needed. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, you know, I've always been a team first guy, but I think I'm a quarterback. I think that's that.
Well, we can add confidence to the long list of attributes for Jalen Hurts. That seems to be apparent, which is a good thing for the team who drafts him. Victor, I know you're high on this guy, and I can see why, but tell me why.
I just think he's a baller. I think he's a proven winner at every stage that he's been on, even when faced adversity, when being obviously having his spot taken from him at his previous school and not wavering and being able to come back in there and still win and still play at a high level and not, you know, sink his head down and be upset about, you know, losing his spot or due to injury or whatever the case may be. Like, he comes in there, and when he straps his helmet on and jumps in that huddle, you know you're getting a winner. You know you're getting a guy that's on your side. You know you're getting a guy that's going to battle tooth and nail for you. I mean, this list of guys that he's a part of is incredible. 30 passing touchdowns and 20 rush. I mean,
it bodes well, I will say.
He's a baller, and he can do it with his arm and with his legs. And I just think he's a guy that you put him in any huddle, in any locker room, in any football team, guys will get in that huddle and be like, okay, I'm ready to rock.
To Vic's point, when you were at Indy this past week, it was, you would say, Jalen Hurts, as much as anybody else, improved their stock or was better than perception. Mm-hmm. As that tape showed, he really threw the ball well. And when you watch him play this year, he broke so many tackles. That speed that we saw in the 40, he played to that speed. So the big question is, will there be consistent accuracy in those drills? In adverse conditions, he did a great job of that.
We talk about how players, we say things like they'll do anything to win and they'll always put the team first. We can say that with certainty about Jalen Hurts. You know why he did it? He showed us that already. He has shown us already that he is willing to put the team above himself. He knows what it looks like to go from the guy to the backup pretty quickly. It happened at Alabama. He was a huge part in their success, not just when he was the starter, but also alongside Tua. So I think the kind of player that has immense character. Mike used the phrase earlier on, the tape sets the floor. Is that what it was? And the ceiling set, or sorry, the character sets the ceiling. I mean, the character's off the charts.
But there is no ceiling. You heard him say it. So don't.
Good point.
The sky is not.
And it must be the off season. Everybody's dancing. We will start with Giants wide receiver. Sterling Shepard. That's his anniversary. So they were celebrating.
Love
nice.
It.
2 years. That's He's well good. Done right there.
I know how hard it was his rookie year to learn the plays. I wonder how many times they did this.
Yeah. Shot fired. Look at my man. Look at that precious thing. Victor and his daughter.
She gassed me up to do this, man.
Yes. Look at- I love
she
it.
Knew to do that right at the end, right?
I like the matching sweatshirts. It works out.
It kind of just happened, too.
Yeah, I know. But it worked out. All right, that got us thinking. How about the best dances from the season, okay? We'll rank, like, who wore it best, who did it best. What are we starting with? I love this.
Coming out with a bang here, huh? Wow.
Yeah, I feel like we just, like, you know.
Let's be honest.
We're not burying the lead.
Kill it pretty much all year long.
That's strong. Yeah.
The Macarena was good, but it's no bye-bye-bye.
It's solid.
It's solid.
But they went off on a tangent there at the end.
NSYNC was totally NSYNC.
Yes.
So, and really? This, I love you, Kirk, but I don't.
I love a quarterback doing any celebration.
I know, but what is that?
That's motivation for people like me, that I too could score a touchdown one day.
You know what? Why not dance? All right, what's the dance? What's the TikTok? By the way, I had to do this all weekend, too, but I didn't put mine out there.
The TikTok dance?
I won that break. You know?
Yo, what's the name of this?
Oh, if you got kids, called, you live with TikTok.
I forgot what this one's called. It's, yeah. Huh?
No, there's TikTok. Why don't you do your own and put a little salsa in it? Yeah.
I can do that too. That's
all
easy.
All right,
that's
all right.
Easy.
Mike Tannenbaum, by the way, stealth.
Hey!
No.
He is. There's only one
you can
ask to answer.
I'm not even
good. Sneaky guy. And we'll do it tomorrow, baby. The jump is next.